Have you ever noticed how the people you work with can make or break your day? Michael Bungus-Stainier certainly has. In his groundbreaking book, How to Work with Almost Anyone, he reveals a startling truth. While 70% of our job satisfaction comes from our relationships at work, most of us leave these crucial connections entirely to chance. We exchange pleasantries, dive into tasks, and hope for the best, until inevitable misunderstandings and conflicts emerge. The book has become a sensation among Silicon Valley executives and Fortune 500 leadership teams, with Brené Brown calling it a masterclass in human connection. What makes this approach revolutionary isn't just its practical framework, but its radical premise. That intentionally designing our working relationships isn't just possible, it's essential for both success and happiness in our professional lives. As Adam Grant notes, this book doesn't just change how you work with others, it transforms how you experience work itself. Working relationships determine both our success and happiness, yet most of us leave them entirely to chance. We exchange pleasantries, dive into work, and hope for the best. This passive approach manifests in various ways, avoiding difficult conversations, making assumptions about others' intentions, and letting small frustrations accumulate without addressing them. Inevitably, cracks appear, misunderstandings accumulate, expectations go unmet, and stress-induced conflicts emerge. When relationships deteriorate, most people simply resign themselves to disappointment, treating damaged relationships as an unavoidable cost of doing business. This pattern of decline isn't inevitable. Every working relationship can be improved through intentional design and maintenance. The key is recognizing that relationships require active management rather than passive acceptance of their natural entropy. Just as we maintain our physical health through regular exercise and checkups, our professional relationships need consistent attention and care to remain healthy and productive. Bungus-Stainier introduces the concept of a best possible relationship, BPR, an intentionally designed working partnership built on three essential qualities. A BPR is safe, removing fear and creating psychological safety where people aren't punished for speaking up, making mistakes, or challenging ideas. It's vital, making work both essential and enlivening by combining purpose, autonomy, and mastery, allowing individuals to feel both competent and challenged. And perhaps most importantly, it's repairable, acknowledging that all relationships will experience damage but can be fixed with commitment and capacity. This means viewing conflicts not as relationship-ending events but as opportunities for growth and deeper understanding. These qualities don't emerge spontaneously. They must be cultivated through deliberate conversation and ongoing maintenance. At the heart of creating a BPR lies what Bungus-Stainier calls the keystone conversation, a structured discussion that establishes shared responsibility for the relationship's health, permission to continue discussing the relationship in both good and difficult times, and deeper understanding of each other beyond incomplete assumptions. This conversation typically includes exploring each person's working style, communication preferences, and what they need to do their best work. Common barriers to relationship deterioration include unclear expectations, unspoken assumptions, and fear of addressing issues directly. The BPR framework provides practical tools for overcoming these obstacles: regular check-ins, explicit discussion of working preferences, and protocols for addressing tensions before they become conflicts. This approach might initially feel uncomfortable, especially in organizational cultures that don't typically prioritize relationship-building conversations. It challenges traditional norms about hierarchy, power, and leadership, suggesting that vulnerability and openness are strengths rather than weaknesses. But as William Gibson famously noted, the future is already here, it's just not very evenly distributed. The organizations and individuals who embrace this relationship-centered approach gain significant advantages in psychological safety, engagement, and human flourishing. They experience higher levels of trust, more effective collaboration, and greater resilience in facing challenges. What if, instead of focusing on fixing weaknesses, we intentionally designed relationships that amplify our strengths? This is the power of the first question in the Keystone Conversation: what's your best? Like legendary climbers Alex Honnold, who free-soloed El Capitan, or Edmund Hillary, who first summited Everest, we all have moments when we reach our peak performance, when we're operating at our absolute best. These moments aren't random accidents, but occur when our natural talents, practice skills, and the right context converge. The Amplify question invites you to identify precisely what creates these peak moments, what talents energize you, what skills you've mastered, and in what contexts you shine brightest. By sharing this information with colleagues, you create opportunities for more of these peak experiences, rather than being trapped in work that drains you. A crucial distinction emerges between being good at something versus being fulfilled by it. Many of us fall victim to what Bungay Stanier calls the curse of competence. We get trapped doing tasks we excel at but don't enjoy. By separating these dimensions in conversation, you can articulate, "I'm good at detailed financial analysis, but I don't find it energizing. What really lights me up is synthesizing complex information into strategic insights." This question fundamentally shifts workplace dynamics from the traditional deficit model, focusing on fixing weaknesses, to a strengths-based approach. When both parties understand what brings out each other's best, they can intentionally create conditions where both flourish rather than merely function. The most powerful aspect of the Amplify question isn't just identifying your strengths, but making them explicit to others. This shared understanding creates a foundation for designing work that leverages what each person does best, leading to higher engagement, better results, and greater fulfillment. Just as Earth's unusually large moon creates steady, predictable seasons that enable agriculture and civilization, our personal habits and preferences create a rhythm to how we work. The steady question, "What are your practices and preferences?" explores these consistent patterns that shape our productivity and interactions. Despite our occasional erratic moments, we all travel in consistent ruts and grooves that shape how we work. Some of us are morning people who tackle complex problems before noon. Others hit their stride in the afternoon. Some process information by talking it through. Others need quiet reflection time. Some prefer frequent check-ins, others feel micromanaged by too much oversight. These preferences aren't just quirky personality traits, they're the foundation of how we function at our best. Yet remarkably, we rarely make these patterns explicit to those we work with most closely. Instead, we expect others to somehow intuit our needs or adapt to our unspoken expectations, setting the stage for frustration and misunderstanding. The steady question invites you to identify and articulate your key working preferences across several dimensions. Communication styles, how you prefer to receive information. Meeting formats, what makes meetings productive for you. Feedback approaches, how you best receive criticism and praise. Work rhythms, when you're most focused or creative. And decision-making processes, how you evaluate options and reach conclusions. By sharing these preferences, you're not making demands that everything revolve around your needs. Rather, you're creating transparency about how you operate at your best, making it easier for others to work effectively with you. When both parties share their preferences, you can identify similarities, potential conflicts, and ways to accommodate differences. This conversation transforms unconscious habits into conscious choices. Instead of silently resenting a colleague who schedules brainstorming sessions at 8 a.m. when your creative energy peaks after lunch, you can explicitly discuss timing preferences. Instead of feeling frustrated by a boss who sends terse emails that seem angry when they're simply being efficient, you can understand their communication style. The steady question doesn't eliminate all friction. Some preferences will inevitably conflict. But by making these patterns explicit, you create the foundation for negotiating workable compromises rather than suffering through misaligned expectations. Just as skilled lighting directors in film make their subject shine, certain working relationships illuminate our best qualities. The good date question, What can you learn from successful past relationships invites reflection on those exceptional partnerships where you felt seen, understood, and found the perfect balance of challenge and support. These relationships felt effortlessly successful. You clicked, work flowed smoothly, and even hiccups strengthened rather than damaged your connection. By examining these successes, you can identify the specific behaviors, words, and qualities that created this magic. We often misattribute responsibility for successful relationships due to self-serving bias. This exercise corrects that by first celebrating the other person's contributions, their words, actions, and qualities, then acknowledging your own role, what you said, did, and how you showed up, and finally examining contextual factors that supported success. When exploring past successful relationships, look for patterns. Did these people challenge you intellectually while providing emotional support? Did they give you autonomy while remaining available for guidance? Did they recognize your contributions publicly? Did they communicate in a particular way that resonated with you? Similarly, examine your own contributions. Were you more vulnerable and authentic with these people? Did you take more risks or show more initiative? Did you communicate differently or invest more deeply in the relationship? Finally, consider the context. Was there a shared goal or purpose? Was the organizational culture supportive? Were there specific structures or processes that facilitated success? By mining these past successes, you extract wisdom that can be applied to new relationships. You might discover that you thrive with bosses who provide clear expectations but give you freedom in execution, or that you collaborate best with colleagues who begin with big picture discussions before diving into details. The power of this question lies in transforming intuitive chemistry into explicit understanding. Rather than hoping to randomly encounter people you work well with, you can actively create conditions for success by sharing what has worked before and learning what has worked for others. This reflection also reveals that successful relationships aren't just lucky accidents. They're co-created through specific behaviors and approaches that can be intentionally reproduced. By making these patterns explicit, you provide a roadmap for building new relationships that bring out the best in everyone involved. Just as a disastrous gaming tournament can quickly end in defeat, some working relationships start badly and spiral downward. Unlike quick gaming deaths, these professional struggles often drag on painfully. However, these difficult experiences offer rich wisdom about conditions you need to thrive and ways you might sabotage relationships. The bad date question. What can you learn from frustrating past relationships? Invites honest examination of past professional struggles. While each difficult relationship felt uniquely personal, they often reveal recurring patterns worth understanding to avoid similar pitfalls. This question requires particular courage because it asks you to examine your own role in relationship failures rather than simply blaming others. It's tempting to cast yourself as the innocent victim and others as villains, but the truth usually involves mutual contribution to dysfunctional dynamics. When exploring past difficult relationships, start by acknowledging your contributions to the mess. What you said or didn't say, what you did or didn't do, and how your presence affected dynamics. Perhaps you withdrew when feeling criticized, rather than addressing concerns directly. Maybe you became passive-aggressive when frustrated, instead of having honest conversations. Or you might have failed to establish boundaries around workload or communication. Next, identify how the other party contributed through their words, actions, and ways of being. Were they chronically late to meetings, signaling disrespect for your time? Did they take credit for your work? Did they communicate in ways that felt dismissive or controlling? Finally, consider contextual factors. What may be odds stacked against you? Which specific moments tested the relationship, and what insights these reveal? Perhaps you were working under impossible deadlines, dealing with conflicting priorities from different stakeholders, or operating in a toxic organizational culture. The wisdom in these painful experiences often reveals your relationship triggers and boundaries. You might discover that you shut down when faced with public criticism, struggle with micromanagement, or become defensive when your expertise is questioned. By sharing these insights during your Keystone conversation, you help others understand your sensitivities and how to avoid triggering them. Similarly, learning about others' past relationship struggles helps you avoid unintentionally repeating patterns that have caused them pain. This question transforms past wounds into future wisdom. Rather than carrying unconscious baggage into new relationships, you can use these insights to establish healthier patterns from the beginning. This final question of the Keystone Conversation acknowledges the inevitable, that every working relationship will face moments of crisis or struggle. The repair question, how will you fix it when things go wrong, encourages preparation for repair before damage occurs. Just as Japan experiences devastating earthquakes like the 2011 Tohoku disaster, relationship breakdowns are completely predictable. What's hard is doing something about them. By discussing repair strategies in advance, you create both encouragement and liberation by preparing for the inevitable. The power of this question lies not just in your specific answers, but in the shared acknowledgement that breakage will occur. By discussing repair before damage happens, you'll be better equipped to notice failure and fix it together. As Mr. Rogers wisely said, anything that's human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can be more manageable. This question invites reflection on past successful repairs and identification of your bridge-building approaches. These might include naming what's happening. I notice we seem to be talking past each other. Staying curious. Help me understand your perspective. Remembering the goal. Let's revisit what we're trying to accomplish together. Seeking understanding. What did you hear me say? De-escalating. Let's take a break and come back to this. And making the first move to rebuild. I value our relationship and want to work through this. By identifying and sharing these strategies, you help others recognize when bridges are being built, even in the heat of conflict. You also establish permission to call out relationship damage when it occurs, rather than letting small fractures grow into unbridgeable chasms. This question fundamentally shifts how relationships handle conflict. Instead of seeing disagreements as threats to the relationship, they become expected moments that, when handled well, can actually strengthen your connection. Research shows that relationships that successfully navigate conflict often emerge stronger than those that never face challenges. The repair question also acknowledges the reality that we all make mistakes. We say thoughtless things, miss important signals, fail to follow through on commitments, or react poorly under stress. By establishing in advance that repair is both expected and welcomed, you create psychological safety for imperfection and growth. Perhaps most importantly, this question transforms relationship maintenance from a reactive process, fixing things after they break, to a proactive one, preparing for inevitable challenges. This shift alone dramatically increases the likelihood that your relationship will weather storms rather than being destroyed by them. With the five essential questions established, the focus shifts to actually having this transformative conversation. As Ursula K. Le Guin reminds us, utterance is magic and words do have power. The Keystone Conversation is where the best possible relationship begins to be built. Though it might feel awkward or vulnerable, especially the first few times, this discomfort is normal. You're co-creating something important and rare, shifting the foundations of success. The approach to this conversation can be broken down into four key phases: making the invitation, starting the conversation, managing the middle, and bringing it to a strong conclusion. When making the invitation, be transparent about the purpose and share the five questions in advance. There's never a perfect moment to initiate this conversation, but rarely a truly bad one either. You can have this discussion before first meeting, in a relationship that's going well, one that's grown stale, or even one that feels broken, though not during active conflict. At the start of the conversation, focus on creating psychological safety by increasing what Bungay Stainier calls the Terra quotient. Tribe, are you with me? Expectation, do I know what's coming? Rank, are you more important than me? And autonomy, do I have a choice? choose an appropriate location, demonstrate curiosity, show vulnerability by answering every question you ask, and co-create the conversation. During the middle portion, remember that nothing needs to be solved. You're sharing information that's useful, true, and heartfelt while listening with intent. Don't skip difficult questions, as what you don't discuss becomes permanently difficult to address. Maintain balance by both asking and answering questions, especially if you hold more power in the relationship. At the end, finish on an upbeat note by sharing what was most useful about the conversation, which strengthens neural connections and provides feedback, and expressing appreciation for the mutual risk-taking and commitment to building a relationship that's safe, vital, and repairable. The success of a keystone conversation isn't measured by how smoothly it went or whether you covered every question perfectly. The real win is opening the portal to a best possible relationship through shared commitment and permission to continue discussing the relationship. However, this isn't a one-and-done deal. Staying committed requires regular maintenance. Just as satellites in orbit constantly receive minor damage from space debris, relationships accumulate small injuries through everyday interactions. Without regular maintenance, even the best relationships deteriorate. Bungay Stanier offers 6 maintenance principles for keeping relationships alive, divided into mindset principles and rhythm principles. The mindset principles address how to approach everyday interactions. Stay curious, be open-minded and understand that your perspective is incomplete. Stay vulnerable, share what's useful for the relationship, and stay kind, assume positive intent, and be generous. These principles create the foundation for healthy, ongoing communication. The rhythm principles concern the pattern of maintenance. Adjust always, make small adjustments like a sailor trimming sails, repair often, address hurts quickly, and reset as needed. Periodically recharge the relationship when it goes flat. These principles establish the cadence for relationship care. Before taking action in a troubled relationship, you need to understand what's really happening. 2 maintenance questions help map relationship situations. What are the facts? Distinguishing between verifiable data, judgments, feelings, and wants. And what position are you in? Recognizing whether you're in a one-up, controlling position, or a one-down, victim position. Regular relationship maintenance includes both giving and receiving. Asking what's working well counteracts our human bias to focus on problems and helps maintain Gottman's healthy 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions. Noticing quiet gestures, subtle bids for connection, helps strengthen relationships through small acknowledgments and responses. When relationships experience damage, repair is essential. Ask what's as yet unsaid and unsurfaced to bring potential issues into the open before they fester. When explicit conflict emerges, fight with skill by remembering to breathe, listening to understand, distinguishing between facts and judgments, and maintaining open body language. Sometimes relationships need complete resets after a crisis, a significant role change, or when you've settled for stable ambiguity. The question, "Should we begin again?" invites another keystone conversation to reforge your BPR with new understanding. When relationships must end, the wake approach, celebrating what's past with both sorrow and appreciation, offers the most dignity and closure. The book concludes by positioning relationship skills not as optional soft skills, but as essential life skills. Science increasingly shows relationships, not individual units, as the primary organizing factor of life, from quantum mechanics to forest ecosystems. As physicist Carlo Rovelli notes, good scientific theory should focus on how things affect one another. This principle extends from the subatomic level, where particles exist only in relationship to each other, to the macro level of ecological systems, where every organism exists in intricate interdependence. This perspective fundamentally challenges the traditional Western view of humans as independent actors occasionally engaging with others. Instead, we are fundamentally defined by our relationships. We exist in connection with others, and these connections determine both our happiness and success. Research in neuroscience shows that our brains are literally wired for social connection, with neural pathways that specifically respond to and process social interactions. Studies in positive psychology consistently find that the quality of our relationships is the single strongest predictor of life satisfaction and longevity. The label soft skills for relationship abilities misleadingly suggests they're less important than technical hard skills. But research consistently shows that beyond a basic threshold of technical competence, relationship skills become the primary differentiator in career success. The ability to build trust, navigate conflict, collaborate effectively, and create psychological safety determines leadership effectiveness far more than technical expertise. Studies from Google's Project Oxygen and similar research initiatives have found that top performers in organizations distinguish themselves through relationship competencies like emotional intelligence, communication skills, and the ability to coach others. Just as trees and forests communicate and share resources through underground mycorrhizal networks, humans thrive through our connections with others. These forest networks, sometimes called the Wood Wide Web, demonstrate how even seemingly independent organisms are actually part of vast cooperative systems. Similarly, humans are not isolated individuals, but nodes in a complex web of relationships that shape our identity, well-being, and impact. Social network analysis shows that our behavior, beliefs, and even health are significantly influenced by connections up to 3 degrees removed from us. While not every working relationship will be fantastic, each one could be better through commitment to building the best possible relationship. By applying the principles of the Keystone Conversation and ongoing maintenance, we can transform our experience of work from one of isolation or conflict to one of meaningful connection and shared purpose. This involves regular check-ins, active listening, addressing tensions early, and celebrating shared successes. The book's final message is both challenging and hopeful. We are our relationships. By investing in them intentionally rather than leaving them to chance, we create the conditions for both greater success and deeper fulfillment in our working lives. This investment includes developing emotional intelligence, practicing empathy, building trust through consistency, and maintaining boundaries that protect both parties. The quality of our relationships determines not just our personal happiness, but our collective capacity to solve problems and create value in an increasingly interconnected world.